This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by Wheel Science. If you're looking for world-class carbon wheels that are UCI approved, come with a lifetime warranty and shipped free worldwide, then check out Wheel Science. Get all the performance at half the price, and when you use the coupon code KONAEDGE at checkout, you'll get an extra 10% discount. To learn more, head over to thekonaedge.com/wheels to find out more, or click on the link in your podcast player now. That's thekonaedge.com/wheels.
Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge, and it's a great pleasure to welcome this guest onto a podcast. We've been liaising sort of off the podcast for a while, and great to finally get him on. Joby Gutierrez. Joby, welcome on to the Kona Edge.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Joby, I'm excited to have you on because your story, you were just telling me a little bit about it before we started recording, and it's crazy. You've had a really wild experience on the Big Island, but we'll talk about that in a moment. Tell me a little bit about your sort of introduction into triathlon. How did you get started?
I started in the sport I surf, I mountain bike, and my background is running. And I never really thought about putting them all together. I thought, I'm comfortable in the water. I can run. I can bike. Let's go for a triathlon. And so I entered my first local race. It was a short sprint, about a half mile swim, 10 mile bike, and a 3 mile run. And I finished the race on a borrowed bike. And I thought, this is cool. This is pretty cool. So eventually I went out and got an upgraded bike for about $100 at a garage sale. And I started training on that and putting in the time and just doing a lot of sprint races, and then worked my way up to Olympic distance. And then I thought, I'm going to have a go at a half Ironman, and everything just kind of progressed from there.
How long ago was that? When did you get started?
I started when I was about 25 years old.
Which was how many years ago?
That was 20 years ago.
Wow.
20 years ago. Yeah. Yeah. And I did my first Ironman at the age of, I believe, 30 years old.
That's pretty cool, Joby, that you sort of eased your way into it. So often we see guys coming into the sport and season one, they're talking Ironman. You sort of eased your way in and found your way. Do you think that's the right way to do it?
I really do think so, because along the way I was able to address limiters and really focus on just giving myself a healthy dose of volume and not trying to just ramp up too quickly. For the first 4 years that I raced, I did so many other things in addition to that, that I think helped with overall athletic development. And I wasn't just singularly focused on completing an Ironman. And so I think that was very helpful for me. And I think it helped to keep myself injury free along the way.
I was going to say that in my opinion is probably the key to longevity in the sport, is not going all gung ho in season one, because we see it all the time. And I've spoken about it on the podcast, guys who come into the sport straight up Ironman, and then they're there for a season or two and you never see them again.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, I think that's important. You know, it's the big thing that I focus on, and I tell all the athletes that I work with, is it's about sustainability. It's not what you can do for 5 months and just wreck yourself and just come out fried on all levels, socially, emotionally, hormonally. But it's about what can you do day after day? And it's the, you know, we're playing the long game here. It's not just to get to one race, but it's overall, you know, the overall development, I think is important, and just for happiness and satisfaction in the sport. Mm. I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, we speak about it often as well, and I'm sure you'd agree with the work that you do with athletes. I mean, you've coached quite a few athletes to Kona as well, that Kona's not an overnight thing, and qualifying and racing on the Big Island, it's a process, and it takes time, and you've got to build that base, and coming in gung-ho like that, you're not doing yourself any favors from a long-term perspective of getting to the Big Island if that's what your goal is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there are athletes who, you know, they say year two, hey, I want to qualify for Kona, and they do it. And that certainly wasn't me. When I started, I did my first few Ironmans and Kona wasn't even a thought. It was just, I want to do this long distance race. And as I completed that, I thought, wow, I wonder if I can get there. And what if? And the thought started as a thought, and then it kind of progressed from there. And then I realized that I had a lot of work to do. And I think I was blessed with really good coaches in my life who taught me and ingrained in my head that nothing is overnight. And I was willing to put in the work, and I put in the work, and it wasn't for me from the time I decided, hey, I want to try to qualify, to the time it actually happened. It was about a 6-year process for me. And it taught me a lot, and it showed me a lot, both as an athlete and a coach. And I think the perspective that I can help athletes to embrace when they're on their journey to get to Kona, you know, because it is not for many people, it's not just, hey, I want to do Kona, and then the next year they qualify. It doesn't work that way for a lot of people. And so it's definitely long term, and it's a process.
Yeah, absolutely. Toby, pre-triathlon and pre-Ironman, you mentioned you were involved in lots of different sports. You ran and you surfed. Did you do those sports at any significant level, or was it just a social thing to stay fit and healthy?
Yeah, for me, my big sport was baseball. And okay. I thought, you know, at 5'8", 165 pounds, if my aspirations were way out of reach. You know, I was convinced in high school I was going to be a professional baseball player. And well, when I got into college, that quickly became, I was grounded a little bit. And in college, I continued to run. I ran cross country in high school, and I was not a strong runner. I ran one varsity race my whole high school experience. And I was kind of the slowest kid on the team. And the cool thing for me is I ran all 4 years. I worked my way up, and I improved personally, but I wasn't like the top guy on the team. You know, I ran one varsity race. And if for me, when I went to college, I just thought, you know, I'm going to continue to train. I worked out, I lifted weights, just did a lot of variety of things, mountain bike. And running was one of those things that I just kind of stuck with. And I've been doing it since my freshman year in high school. And, you know, I'm 45 now, and it's something that I stuck with, and that, so then obviously baseball, I gave up baseball. I spent more time surfing, more time just doing other water sports, wakeboarding, things like that. Snowboarding, skiing, I'm very active. I like to do things. And so my background, I never really raced at a high level as a runner, but for me, I just, the more I continued to run, the more improvements I made.
What was the attraction to triathlon? What really sucked you in?
Gosh, let's see. I think for me, I found that in the sport of triathlon, my running ability, it seemed like it, and my efficiency, it seemed like it paid off big time in the sport. And so I was, you know, especially when I first started, I went from my weakest event to a moderately strong event to my strongest event. And mentally, psychologically, that put me in a great place for a race, because I was always catching and moving up. And so it's psychologically, it's also very easy when you're moving past people. It's easier to continue to push as opposed to getting overtaken and then you're just falling apart, and then mentally you can kind of crumble. And so that was the draw for me. It's like, okay, well, how I know that I can run well, but how can I improve my bike? How can I improve my swim so that I'm not, you know, trying to play catch up the whole entire race? And that's kind of been my MO for a long time, is just, I've over the years, I've strengthen mostly my bike, so that I'm not trying to not having to run people down as much as before. And for me, that was like that was a missing link in terms of qualifying. It's my swims have stayed fairly consistent, about the same. My runs, depending on the race, they're all about the same times, off of the bike, you know, like a 3:08 to like a 3:20 is about the range that I finish in. I've had one faster, some slower, but what's consistently improved over the years is my bike time, and I've gotten stronger and I've been able to push more watts, on the bike. And that has allowed me to get into a position where I'm fortunate for the last 5 races that I've done to qualify for Kona, which I mean, if you asked me 15 years ago, I would say no way. I mean, the first time I qualified, I thought this is a one-time thing. I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to go to the Big Island. I'm going to race. I'm going to enjoy the whole experience. And lo and behold, you know, it's been 5 years. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
That's amazing. Joey, talk to me about getting to the point where you start thinking, you know what, Kona is an option. I think I'm good enough, or I think I can get good enough to qualify. Talk me through that process.
I remember my first race that I thought, hey, I want to qualify. And that was at Ironman Arizona. And it was back when Ironman Arizona was in the spring. I think it was like April or so. And I finished the race, and I go back and I did fairly well for myself. I went, at the time I went, 10 hours and 9 minutes, and my time improved from my first couple of Ironmans. And I thought, what do I need to do to make it? Like, what do I need to do to get to Kona? So I go back at the results. I look at the results and I'm trying to see, okay, where's my limiter? And I knew my swim was a limiter, but I knew that the time that I can gain, I thought if I gained 10 minutes on the swim, that's still not going to put me where I need to be. But my bike became the one area that stood out. Like I need to improve my bike. And so I thought, well, if I want to get there, I need to make sure that I get better on the bike. And so that's what I put my energy into. I made some gains on the bike, and so for the next four years, I tried to qualify at Arizona, and every year my bike time got faster. My overall race time got faster, yet I wasn't any closer to qualifying. and so, you know, I missed it sometimes by 5 minutes and sometimes by, you know, 10 minutes, but it seemed like I ran out of real estate on the run, because I was running people down, but I just didn't have, I always wished if the race were 2 miles longer on the run, I might have a better chance. So,
make it a 30 miler.
Exactly. But most people aren't going to go for that. So I just, you know, every year it was my wife and I had the conversation. We'd leave Arizona, and that was the race for me, because it was close. We'd leave Arizona and she'd say, so what do you think? You know, she was always in my corner saying, hey, look, let's go for it again. Let's try it next year. And so for me, it was a year process. I didn't just pick a race, you know, 4 months down the road. I just, every year it was that was the race. And I continued to improve, made gains, and that was encouraging for me. So just like my experience back when I ran in high school, I wasn't the fastest, but I was improving. I was making gains, and that's what kept me motivated. And that's what drives me. So, yeah. And for me, what I ended up doing, that the big shift for me that helped me to qualify for the first time, I qualified at Ironman Cabo. And I realized, as all my friends and people that I trained with, they just struggled in the heat. And I love to run in hot weather, and I do fairly well compared to others. And I thought, like, what am I thinking racing Ironman Arizona? Because it's typically fairly cool. You know, it's, you know, mid 70s Fahrenheit. And I thought, I just, if I'm running out of real estate, I need a race that's miserable. Like I just need a hot race. And so I thought, okay, let's look on the calendar, something that's close by, something I can get to fairly easy. And I thought, okay, Cabo. Yeah. The weather in Cabo is going to be maybe close to 90. It's going to be humid. I thought, let's try a different strategy. Cause for the last 4 years, my strategy has not worked. So that's what I did. I raced and I came off the bike in about the same position that I normally do. But, as I'm running, my wife has been, she's always there on the sidelines, kind of giving me updates, letting me know my position. And I kind of do the math in my head and I'm trying to think, okay, if I hold this pace, I can probably catch these people. And by mile 10 on that course, I was in like top 10. And I thought this is cool. And I saw people like coming up with cramps, you know, grabbing their hamstrings, people on the side of the road, kind of just out of commission, you know, they're not doing well. And that, you know, that continued to work out well for me. And I eventually ran up into second place, during that race. And I had a great run and it wasn't easy. It was hard, but I didn't crumble. I did fairly well, but everybody else around me seemed to fade with the heat and humidity. And so I thought, damn it, this is my strategy. This is what I need to do. So from that point on, I just chose races that were hot and humid. And that allowed me to, rather than give myself more real estate on the run, it essentially kind of served the same purpose without making the run longer.
Yep.
And it was a good strategy for me. It worked.
Absolutely. And you said that first one, you went there, it was a case of it's happened now. I'm not sure if it's going to happen again. How do you approach the race from that perspective? Do you go there just to experience it, or do you think this is my one shot? I've got to give it as good a go as I can and race it as hard as I can.
Yeah, when I get to a race, because I'm not the way that I race, there's no guarantees. You know, I've been fortunate to qualify the last 5 years that I've raced an Ironman, but in reality, I'm not the fastest guy out there. I'm just looking to get my spot, and I've been fortunate to finish, you know, on the podium three of the five races, but I'm going there thinking, I just want to race to my potential, and you can't control who shows up on the day. And I just want to go out there looking back on my race, knowing that, hey, I put my best foot forward. I gave it my all. I didn't back down when I need to, because there's always these critical moments in a race where your mind, it's a mental battle too. And your mind sometimes will give you permission to back down, and I feel like I go into my races like with some pretty good mental fortitude and some mental toughness and strength. And I don't ever want to walk away from a race feeling like I backed down. And so I know that I go into a race wishing that I put my best effort forward, and the chips, let the chips fall where they may. And, you know, what happens, happens. And that approach has worked well for me. And prior to qualifying, I was so focused on qualifying that it became almost a stressor to me. Like, okay, I need to finish in the top three, or I need to finish in the top four if I'm going to qualify. And I was so consumed with getting my spot that kind of became an added stress to the race. And once I qualified the first time, I feel like I had permission to just let go of that and then just want to show up and give my best effort. Cause I was typically just doing one race a year. And I thought, this is my race. I'm going to give my best effort. And that has worked out well for me. And I feel like every race that I qualified at since then, that perspective has been more ingrained. And that's my goal, is walk away finishing like, hey, I gave my best effort out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And having that added pressure, if you haven't qualified yet, going there, that's what the goal is. And having missed it a few years, not through any fault of your own, but just it is what it is. Having that pressure off really makes a big difference. And having that monkey off your back almost gives you the freedom to just go there and enjoy yourself and express yourself. So I think that makes a big difference. But let's talk about 2017. You qualified. It wasn't your first time. You said it was the probably the first time that you had gone there and the focus was purely on Kona as opposed to other races that year. Talk to me about the days leading up to the big race.
Yeah, so I have, you know, as you mentioned, I typically put in a lot of my effort into qualifying, and I typically do a spring race and then race Kona in the fall. And this was the first year that I knew that I was going into Kona more fit than probably any of my qualifying races. So there's a lot of excitement within knowing like, hey, I'm going into this with some pretty good fitness. I have the right balance of everything. And so I'm there. I got there on Wednesday. The race is on Saturday. I got there on Wednesday and went out for my ride. Just kind of made sure everything was working. Thursday, I just a lot of hanging around, checking things in, getting things taken care of. And I probably had way too much caffeine. And, actually I know I had way too much caffeine. Here in Kona, I'm drinking the coffee and that evening at dinner, something wasn't right. And I just felt a thready sort of thready pulse. Something was off. And I told my wife, hey, I'm not feeling well. I'm going to go to bed early. And I thought I had too much caffeine. I'm too jittery. I'm going to bed. Went to bed. The next morning I woke up, felt fine, had my cup of coffee in the morning and met a few others out at the swim. We were going to do our morning swim before we were all racing. And I got out in the water and I'm not a fast swimmer, but I'm comfortable in the water. I'm out in the water and immediately I knew something was off. And I thought, what's going on? Like something, I feel almost a panic feeling in the water, which never happens to me. And I swim about, you know, 20 strokes and I feel like I'm out of breath. Things are labored. And I repeat that process a few times. And then finally I'm just sitting there bobbing in the water and a buddy of mine, he's like, you don't look well. Are you okay? Like you have this, you look like shit. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to swim back to shore. Something's off. So I swam back to shore, just got out of the water. I thought, well, I'm going to go on a bike ride, see how things feel. Changed, went out on a bike ride immediately as I left transition on the bike ride. I'm not pushing really any watts at all, just really light effort. And my heart rate spikes to like 180 beats per minute. And then I knew at that point, I felt dizzy. I knew that something was off. And so I had my wife take me to the hospital which, you know, nobody wants to do, but you know, you gotta be smart and perspective. Instantly, I thought, I'm not okay. Something's wrong with me. And instantly your perspective shifts. And so I went to the hospital. Turns out I was in atrial fibrillation, I had no idea. I just knew I felt like crap. Went in there. They tried to give me some meds. At that point, they said, if the meds don't take and bring him back to normal rhythm, we're going to have to cardiovert him. So shock him back into a normal rhythm, which is essentially what they did. This is about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the day before the race. And the cardiologist said, hey, you're good to go if you want to race tomorrow. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I was fortunate to have a good friend, John Martinez, who works at the Ironman medical tent. And I'm in correspondence with him this whole time. And I just said, hey, I need some confirmation. I don't think I should race because I have a lot of unanswered questions. And he's like, yeah, don't just sit it out. And I said, okay, good. I'm glad you said that. That's confirmation to me. So I had five athletes who were racing that year. So it was kind of cool to watch the race from the perspective of a spectator. And, for me, the decision was easy. I have two amazing daughters at home, my wife, and all of a sudden, like my overall health was definitely way more important than Kona. There's Kona will always be there. And I thought until I get questions answered, I need to step back. There's no way I'm going to race. I'm not going to put myself through this. And so I spectated. I had a great time spectating. But then as soon as I got home, it was like, okay, now I need to get some answers to my questions. Saw a bunch of specialists and I eventually got everything cleared. And so it was about a 3-month process, but at that point, my racing took on an even different perspective, and I got a clean bill of health, and that's kind of how I approached the 2018 season.
Jeremy, I'm so glad that you told that story, because I think as athletes, particularly when you've put in the hard work, and this has happened to me, and I speak from experience as well. I had it at an ultra marathon. I've spoken about comrades here on the podcast lots. And I was in the shape of my life. I think it was 2014 or 2015. Yeah. Woke up on race morning and was as sick as a dog, full of flu, and had to make the decision. Am I going to do it? Am I not? And it's a tough, and you say it's an easy decision, but as far as the perspective goes, it's an easy decision because the race is going to be there next year. But you've put in all this work. It's a huge financial commitment. It's not easy to walk away from a race, but it's the right thing to do. And so often you see athletes who have done the work, but they feel, oh, just because I've done the work, I'm going to race for whatever reason. And you hear stories of guys having heart attacks in the swim or whatever, and it's just not worth that risk.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. It's... You know, I feel as a coach, it gave me a unique and new perspective. And so I essentially walked away, you know, from Kona because I had a lot of unanswered questions about my health and I knew I wasn't well enough to race. Even though I got clearance, I knew that's, I needed to get my questions answered. And I feel like as a coach, it almost when I tell an athlete, hey, I think you should take some time off. You're not doing well. You're sick. Don't go out and train. I feel like I have the ultimate trump card on that. Like, hey, look, I stepped out of from racing in Kona, and yes, it is the financial commitment. My family was there. But you have to look at, you know, overall health and performance, and our long-term health is more important than the short-term race. And so I've used that a few times with my athletes, encouraging them, hey, you know what? I don't want you to train when you're sick. You're not doing well. Take time off. Don't try to squeeze in a little bit. Just take time off, let your body heal. And then when you're good, you get back to training. And so you're right. It's a tough decision. But it's a necessary one. And if we want to stay in the sport long-term, then it's something that we have to do.
Yeah. I mean, you see it all the time in training as well, where people think, oh, we're just going to push through. Like you say, just do a little bit, but you're not doing yourself any favors. I mean, from a coaching perspective, you're not getting the benefits of that workout. So don't do the workout. It's common sense, but we see it so often where guys want to push through because they've got a goal and they think that if they miss a few sessions, it's going to blow the goal out the water. It never, ever happens. You just don't allow yourself to get better, so it just drags on longer.
Yeah, absolutely. The recovery is what we need when we're putting in the training. We need that recovery. If that recovery is not there because we're sick, then the training becomes, well, it's kind of pointless. You know, you might push yourself, but if you're not recovering from that, then we're not going to really have any gains that result from that work.
Well, 2017, that's what happened. You didn't get to race. 2018, you made the decision not to focus on Kona at all. You wanted to obviously race hard. And 2019, you're going back.
Yeah. So the 2017 was, you know, Kona 2017 until about January. It took about that time to get all of the things sorted out. And by January, I knew that I was good to go. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do Ironman, Arizona. I picked that because that's at the end of the year. And for many reasons, it was a bit symbolic for me because I thought I failed so many times at Ironman Arizona. I mean, I failed in terms of trying to qualify, but I learned a lot in the process. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go back there again and race in an environment that I've struggled to qualify in. And it's at the end of the season. So I have all of 2018 to kind of build up. I only raced a couple of times, during 2018. To half Ironmans, and so Arizona was my race, and my number one focus was I just want to have a strong race, a new perspective. I was healthy, I was good to go, and I went out there and I raced, and I put a little bit more energy into the bike going into Arizona, and this was probably the biggest. I would say that the biggest positive of that race for me was normally I get off of the bike and I have to run people down. I have to go. So typically I'm coming off, you know, 15th to 30th, and I'm running myself into, you know, the top five or top six. And I knew at Arizona, I needed to be to get a spot. I knew for sure I needed to be in the top three, possibly fourth, but I wasn't sure about the fourth, but I knew I needed to be in the top three if I wanted a spot. So I thought, well, I want to, you know, have a great race and give my best effort. And when I come in off of the bike, my wife will give me an update. Okay, you're in 17th place. And, you know, as the race unfolds, she kind of gives me updates as far as placing and then what the people ahead of me are running. And I got off the bike about a half, not even half mile out of transition. She says, you're in fourth. And I'm thinking, fourth place?
How did that happen?
So I just could, okay, so I'm going to just not try to bury myself on the run. And I'm in, like, I just have to make sure I don't screw this up. Right. And so I'm getting out. And so it was a different shift because now all of a sudden I'm not trying to like reel people in. And I thought I just need to stay steady. And I stayed steady. And at about mile eight, now about mile 10, I had to ask. I said, how far? She said, okay, you're in third place. And I said, how far is number two? How far is number one? And she tells me, number one's running about the same pace as you. And he's 8 minutes ahead. Number two, running slower than you. And you'll probably catch him in the next 2 or 3 miles. And so I thought in my back of my mind, I thought I could try to run number one down, but let's be realistic here. Let's not get too greedy. Cause I knew if I tried to push too hard that I could potentially crumble and start coming backwards. And so I held steady and I was able to move into second place. I finished, second in second place that day. And I finished just stoked, you know, it was the strongest bike that I've had to date at Arizona. And going back to what I said earlier, that's the one constant or one variable that has continued to improve, which has been really, really, really cool to see that. And then for me, it was more validation, like, okay, finally, after all these years of trying to qualify at Ironman Arizona, I was able to do it. And so I was pretty stoked about that experience.
Very cool. Joby, life outside of triathlon, talk to me a little bit about what you do for a living. I know you coach as well. You've got a pretty busy coaching business, but tell me about life outside of the sport.
Yeah. So I'm juggling quite a bit. So I'm, my full-time job is, I'm a junior high school teacher. I've been in education for 23 years and, I love it. I enjoy it. And then on top of that, I run a coaching business and I'm coaching athletes from, you know, all different levels of athletes. And I have two daughters. I have a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old, and they're my life and they're my focus. And my wife as well, we're a big, big family. One of the main principles for my training, I have to make it efficient. I can't just casually sleep in and get the training in when I want. During the week, my training is done by 6:45 in the morning. On the weekends, I'm up really early because I don't ever want to miss out on a softball game or a swim meet or a weekend wakeboarding or, you know, I don't want to miss out on that stuff. So it kind of requires me to be very efficient with my training. And we have a principal in my house and it's like, hey, if I don't get my training done in the morning, then it doesn't happen. Like I can't try and get it done later on. So it really forces me to get it done first thing in the morning when that's my time and everybody's asleep, I get it done. And so I'm efficient with that. But, juggling, you know, full-time job as an educator and then also juggling the coaching business and even doing some podcasts myself. I'm wearing many hats and it's a juggling that sometimes, but, the one thing that I don't compromise is my family time. And I feel like I can bring a perspective to many of the athletes that I work with, cause they're in a similar situation. You know, they have lots of other things going on and I think my perspective and my experience kind of help helps to help athletes embrace the fact that they have a busy schedule, and you've got to get the training in when you can, as efficiently as you can, and no wasted workouts, no junk miles. It's just all quality training.
Absolutely. FCEndurance.com is the website. I'll pop them in the show notes as well if you want to find out more about Joby and his coaching business. If you need some help, definitely check that out. Joby, I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, swim, the bike, the run, and we'll also touch on nutrition, but we'll save that for next time out. Thanks for your time today.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Brad. I appreciate it.
If you've enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge, I want to invite you to check out the Coach Parry Training Club. The Coach Parry Training Club is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of their triathlon journey. Whether you're just starting out in the sport and training for your first sprint distance race, or if you've been around the block a few times and are looking to take your Ironman performance to the next level, then the Coach Parry Training Club can help you. Developed by double Olympic and Commonwealth Games triathlon coach Lindsay Parry and myself, the Coach Parry Training Club is the go-to online platform for your training needs. It's like having a coach in your pocket. Get 20% off when you join the Coach Parry Training Club by using the coupon code KONA at checkout. Head over to thekonaedge.com/coach or click on the link in your podcast player now. That's thekonaedge.com/coach.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.